Ellie's going to start off by giving us a little review again on some of the books, and also the duplicated material that's available. So why don't you...
Okay, I'm not going to say anything about the books. Naturally, we thought they were wonderful, and we wouldn't have recommended that they buy them. And you can get these all at the bookstore, and you can look them over. I really like this one for just the general growth, interest in growth, you know, personal growth, healing the stages of life, from Eric Erickson. And then this is free material. It's something I've written for a dream workshop on references to biblical references to dreams. And this is available for 25 cents if you want to contribute toward the cost of it. And this is a great piece for people to understand how to work with your own dreams, written for laymen by a professional. So this one is available. And this, I only have two copies left of this, but what's wonderful about Peace Pilgrim is that here is a woman who really gave up all of the material world for the second half of her life and lived a wonderful, happy, fulfilled life. And she talks about when you really are doing what you're supposed to do on this life, doing God's will for you, your life is really happy. And it's just a wonderful, inspiring book. And I only brought 10. I wish I'd brought 50 because I've been giving them away for a long time. But I'll let you all pay a dollar for them if you want to, because that's what I usually pay, a dollar or a dollar and a half for them. And there's two left. And this, you'll get her same message in Steps Toward Inner Peace, which she says inner peace has to come before outer peace can come, and that it's all possible when we get aligned with God's will for us. And it's a wonderful book, and so I wanted to bring it to share. And it doesn't have anything particular to do with dreams, but it has something to do with my sharing it with the world, with you. And that's really all I have to say, Roy, about this.
Okay.
And help yourself to the free stuff, and leave money if you want to, or take them anyway.
This session, I wanted to lift up the parables, some of the parables, as very similar to dreams. And so I've also indicated that parable, dreams, myth, poetry, stories can all be metaphors. That is, a metaphor is something that stands for something else, that is, and is thus illustrated by the story, and is saying something about, in a parable, about our inner life or about the kingdom of heaven. Jesus, of course, taught a lot in parables, and particularly about the kingdom of heaven, or the kingdom of God, as he was his phrase. Again, a kind of metaphorical phrase for our spiritual life. The kingdom of heaven is within, he said. Or among us is another translation. So that the interpersonal is a realm of the kingdom of the spirit. That what is communicated between us, and the love and the faith and trust, the healing that can go on within or between in community. And then also, I mean, the other level of it is what goes on within us too. And perhaps a little bit like the steps to inner peace or to peace, is that there has to be some inner peace before it can go out and assist in the outer peace. So, particularly the phrase then, the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God, is a term for the spiritual realm. And one level of it is that the kingdom of heaven is within. Now, a couple quick little metaphors that Jesus used. He compared the kingdom of heaven to a treasure that was hidden in a field. And when the man found where the treasure was, he kept it secret till he didn't go announcing it all at once. But he went and obtained, his, sold all that he had and bought the field. I think the thing to, even right there, is to see, is to take the parable as a total statement about oneself, not as a statement about your relations to the outer world so much. Because see, when the man or the woman, will say, discovered where the treasure was, the person chose then to put her or his energies into purchasing the treasure, to put all for the treasure, to put all for the inner, for the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven. So, you know, if you apply it outward, well, you might think, well, gee, he's kind of selfish. He doesn't tell the other people where the treasure is, or he's, you know. But if you see, though, that if all aspects are himself, he went around telling other aspects, hey, look what I found. He might get distracted along the way and lose his commitment. Hey, I found it. I've got to keep focused and be willing to sell all. Because maybe when I start talking to some other parts of me, they say, well, are you sure you want to go buy that treasure or that field? I mean, look, you're going to miss out on this over here and that. So you might get distracted, you may get talked out of it. And there's another little couplet that goes along with that. That's the merchant who is looking for the pearl of great price, and then when he finds one, he goes and again and sells all that he has so that he can purchase the pearl of great price. Now you see, you could take that, say if you were to dream that little fragment of a dream, as a dream, you would be getting a message that there was something confronting you, or decision or choice facing you, that about making a crucial decision in your life for your own spiritual well-being. Of course, it might be filled out with a little bit more detail about your personal life would be in the dream. Then there are some other parables that are more elaborate, which are, well, these two little parables are more like, we could say, dream fragments. Then there are two parables, the lost sheep and the lost coin. And it's interesting that they are told side by side. They're like a couplet. And one is has the man as the shepherd, and the other is the woman in the household, of the household. So it's sort of like the masculine and feminine are brought together here in a kind of balancing way, because there's always the masculine within the woman and the feminine within the man. So we have the dual qualities or resources. So again, the theme of this seminar is healing. This parable gives you the sense of direction for healing. Because in the first one, the shepherd has a flock of 100 sheep. And what might the 100 symbolize for us? We were talking a little bit about numbers the other day. What might 100 be in?
A whole.
A whole. Mm-hmm. And so that this flock is complete when all 100 are together. Of course, the one is missing. And if we were to see this dream again, and I think it's a good way to take the parable, is to see it as all aspects of ourselves. We have 99 sheep in ourselves, or 99 aspects of ourselves that are in the fold. They're not in danger. But there's one aspect, one part that is lost. And it has wandered off into the wilderness. It's lost. And one could, in say, if we were focusing on this in more greater discussion, you might identify, for instance, what are some of the things that you feel comfortable about yourself? You know, what things are you confident about? Of the 99, I'm seeing there, you might be a good pianist. You might be a good writer. Do you feel you have a good routine and discipline in your life in the way, you know, so those things you're confident of. And in the parable, the man, which would then represent your ego, that is your conscious self, it's you who makes decisions. So in a dream, when you appear in the dream represents your conscious ego. And so in this parable, the shepherd is the ego, or the conscious self. But the sheep are aspects of himself that he is a steward of, in a sense. He's 99 are safe, but he needs to search for the lost. And then you could identify, well, know about the lost aspect. What, do you have any suggestions of things that people might be troubled about and that might be lost and wandering in the wilderness? Could you identify some ways?
I was thinking of perhaps a parent who died and some unresolved.
A little louder?
A parent who died and some unresolved conflict that was there.
Uh-huh. Okay. Good. Sometimes we have things that we might be embarrassed about. Sometimes there are even kind of secret things that we keep, but sometimes we may lie a little bit. We may exaggerate something, and you know, or it might even be something in the sexual area. A lot of times people are struggling with that aspect of their life. There may be someone who is struggling with their sexual identity. Any other thoughts about
broken relationships?
Broken relationships.
There are parents today that have broken relationships with their children. With real heartaches.
Yeah. And but these are sort of some of the dimensions. So in the parable, the ego, or the shepherd, leaves the 99 and moves in the direction to search and bring his energy to finding the lost part and bringing it into the whole, into the flock. And that lost part is essential in order to create the whole.
It's kind of like you have a classroom of kids, and 40 of them just get along fine, and that doesn't take any extra energy, but you just have one that gets disruptive, and then you have to just take your total energy and commitment to getting the classroom back to order. It talks about how powerful the one part that cries out for healing, how much need is there.
And that when that one gets some, perhaps the essential attention or something that is, it can join the class and be
bring harmony.
Yes?
I was wondering if you would consider that this would have any, would apply to one's physical.
Yes, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one could be concerned about one's physical health and worried about one's physical health. Well, I know I think about my own health and the whole aging process, the transitions. I've gone through some transitions of leaving my full-time work and into moving toward retirement and losing some of the structures and full-time and all, and I'm feeling kind of lost, and my self-esteem and my sense of value kind of going way down, you know. And the thing is, the shepherd comes in with an accepting attitude that, you know, he's not there to judge the lost, he's there to bring it back into the fold. And that's the way, the kind of same kind of attitude that we need to bring to a wounded part of ourselves. Thank you. Well, let's move on. The other one is parallels that is the lost coin, and it's basically the same theme. Just to emphasize, the house is a good symbol for the personality. A house in your dream is often your person, your psyche. And as you're in a room in the dream, and you know, it might be the kitchen, the basement, the attic, a bedroom, a bathroom, and that even says something about the issues that you're struggling with or what might be going on. And the statement being made by the dream. So, in this instance, the woman is in her home and a coin is lost. And as far as we know, a little bit of history is that the importance of this coin is that it may be part of a wedding necklace. And that one of the coins has fallen off and gotten lost, so that there are 10 coins to this wedding necklace. That's one historical thing. I understand that that's from that part of the world, that there was that kind of a tradition. So this coin is especially important, and she has lost it. And then the whole symbolism here is that she lights a candle to bring light, and that the coin maybe had fallen into some dark corner. She gets the broom out, she is sweeping, she's, you know, going into the dark places to locate the coin, and when she's found it, of course, she's overjoyed. So again, the movement on the part of the conscious self, or the ego, the woman, is in the direction of that which is lost. And that is the direction in terms for healing. Another parable that emphasizes this again is the Samaritan. And he is not called the Good Samaritan in the scriptures. It's just the Samaritan, who is an outcast in the Jewish society. And he knew what it was like to be rejected or ignored or to be devalued and to be avoided. And so he was the one that's traveling along the road. Now here again, the Samaritan would represent the Samaritan represents the aspect in ourself that has the capacity to heal. And again, you could identify, you know, what is wounded in me? What is wounded in me? Because there's a wounded man lying along the road. The aspects of ourself that are ignoring the situation are the sides that are well organized, have kind of institutional motivations or schedules that they must keep, the priest and the Levite, and they're also afraid too. They say, oh, you know, this is a dangerous spot, let's not get let's stay away, we might get pounced on, maybe this is a deception. So these, there are aspects that are afraid. They're also concerned about cleanliness. And they may be concerned about schedule, getting on to the temple, whatever. And so if this were a dream, you know, or maybe with a little bit different characters in it of your own, the dream would be telling you there are certain parts of you that do not help to reach out to the wounded side. And that the part that is more able to do that is a part that has some empathy for the wounded, which is the Samaritan, who knows what it's like to hurt, to feel pain, and to go with non-judgment and simply to help and to take that injured part to the end and willing to pay. You know, we talked a little bit about stewardship or something here, that you can sometimes tell where your heart is by where you put your money. And so the Samaritan also is willing to contribute money to assist the wounded man. All right. Now maybe I might just sort of pause there, because this is sort of what I wanted to say about the parables, another way of looking at the parables in terms of keeping all aspects of the parables as parts of ourselves. Because a lot of times we apply them to the outer world, like, you know, you could easily apply the Samaritan one to judgments in the community or racial civil rights, even maybe in the gay community, that'd be non-judgment. We could apply it to the outer situation, but the healing side of ourselves to deal with that would be to come with the Samaritan kind of attitude that accepts, that would try to understand. But here we need to, in terms of bringing healing and peace within, we need to look at these aspects as all part of our inner life. Any question about that? Discussion? I wanted to share then a dream of I guess I got it marked in this one. There it is, this one. And you can all help to interpret it. Let's see now, what did I do with the hymnal? There it is. The hymn, Amazing Grace, How Sweet the Sound, that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. Oh, precious did that grace appear the hour I first believed. Though many dangers, toils, and snares I have already snares I have already come, 'tis grace has brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home. The Lord has promised good to me, his word my hope secures, he will my shield and portion be as long as life endures. Well, this hymn was written by John Newton. I was trying to get a date here on it. I just give the tune. Let's see where. Yeah. 1725 to 1807. That was his lifespan. So probably somewhere around 1760, he was a captain on a slave ship. And he was a seaman. And so maybe, I'm guessing it, maybe around 35 years of age, somewhere in there, he was captain of a ship. So he has a dream.
Page 11.
It's page 11. And at the beginning here, he says something, this is sort of a preface, which he comments about dreams. The most notable impulse which I have ever experienced happened during a dream. Those who know the Holy Scriptures will verify that there have always been warning and miraculous dreams which either prophesy or direct the future, apparently as communications from heaven. And those people who wandered into history of God's people know well that God has not restricted this communication with him to any particular time or period. So then in his dream, John Newton found himself on a sailing ship in Venice. Suddenly a stranger stood before him, wanting to give him a ring. He told John that he would be secure and happy his whole life so long as he had this ring. Newton was very happy about this incident and took good care of his present for a while, until one day he met a man who ridiculed him for placing so much worth on a ring. Finally, Newton himself became convinced that the ring was worthless and that the whole affair had simply been a matter of superstition. He stripped the ring from his finger, dropped it into the water. At that moment, however, he looked up and saw a mighty fire break out in the Alps. And it became clear to him that he would soon be drawn into the fire. As he stood there and reflected upon how senseless he had dealt with matters, on how little he could say on his behalf, a third person approached him and asked him what was wrong. Why did Newton look so sad? Newton told his tale of the ring, how stupidly he had behaved, and how he had literally thrown away everything of importance to him. At this moment, the third man, Newton was not sure if it was identical to the first man. But anyway, this third man sprang into the water, disappeared into the depths, and surfaced with the ring. Newton demanded it back, but the man replied, "I think it is better that I guard it for you. When you are in need of the power of the ring, I will always be at your side." And that was the end of the dream. And
Don't tell what happened. Don't tell what came out of that.
So let's take a look at this ring, or this dream rather, and let's interpret it. Okay, bring some understanding to it. Now, he's on a sailing vessel, and he's in Venice. Any comments that you'd like to make, or thoughts that come to you about his being on a ship in a dream?
Some kind of a journey or movement in his life.
In as what? A little louder?
Maybe some kind, maybe some kind of movement or development in his life, some kind of a journey. But was he in Venice? So would he be at sort of a still?
Yeah, it doesn't say whether he literally, I doubt if he was literally in Venice, but okay. The dream takes place, I mean, the ship is in Venice, which is a seaport. Of course, here we're limited because we don't know what Venice means to John Newton.
Or to the slave trade.
Yeah, or maybe, as she says, to the slave trade, right. Too. You know, it could well be some connection with the slave trade, the port. I'm a little hard of hearing, so you're a little louder.
Is the ship in his dream also a slave ship?
It doesn't say that. It doesn't say that. I think if it were, it probably would have been added.
Oh, so, he didn't believe in God at this time, isn't that true? He didn't believe in God?
Mm-hmm. I think he was a believing man at this time. Yeah. My guess would be that from the dream. Now, one of the things we talk about is the foreground and the background of the dream, or the context. You know, the story about the first man and the second man and the third man and the conversation, that's the foreground of the story. That's the whole action. It takes place on a ship. So the background, the context is the ship. Well, now he's a captain, so I would say that the symbolism is about his career. It sort of fits with what you were saying. It's about something is developing for him in terms of his vocation. And he is no doubt struggling within himself about it. Did I see a hand? Did you want to say something? No. Yeah.
I was thinking when you're mentioning three persons, in my mind that brings out the Trinity. And okay. If he was an atheist at the time, this could be denying the existence of God the Father. Mm-hmm. Or if he was believing, at least he was aware of God the Father. I kind of look at the person that appeared in his dream might have been Jesus.
Yeah. The number three, or the three, there is some. And one thing about symbols, they can often mean a couple things at the same time, sort of time. Yes?
I was just going to comment about maybe he was on a ship with an unknown destination. Like he used to give sealed instructions to a captain of a ship. You don't open this until you get out to sea.
Yeah.
And you don't tell anybody where you're going before you set sail. That's just my impression of this ring business too.
Yeah, that the ring has that quality, yes?
Well, you said that he was a Christian, so maybe he had conflict within his mind. He was a Christian, we don't know how good of a Christian,
Yeah. But
he had a conflict because he was carrying slaves. So the three men coming, giving him the ring is like peace and eternity.
Yeah.
But he doesn't want to come to grips with that because there's money in what he's doing, so he throws it away. And then when he sees the fire in Switzerland, maybe he thinks that's hell. And so he wishes that he had not thrown the ring away. And when somebody went down and got it, and he asked for it, he had mucked his chances.
I think, yeah, it was
you ought to be a screenwriter.
No, you're right on. I think basically, you know, he probably was a Christian already, and that he had gone into, you know, as a seafaring man, and he had risen in the ranks to be command of a ship. But in those times, there was a lot of slave traffic going on, and he got drawn into that. So, I'll give you a little. The first man is a stranger, so it's not anyone that he would identify. It's not someone, you know, like his family or some friend that comes. It is a new person that's come in. a stranger. And it's this stranger that gives him a gift of the ring. Now, usually when we, in a dream, we would describe this as a shadow person. He's of the same sex as ego. In fact, you know, they're basically men, persons in the dream. So he's somehow coming to terms with parts of his maleness, shall we say, which would fit with his vocation. Because, you know, that's his active life and his commitment to a certain kind of work. Well, now a ring. I'm sure you got, you know, we use rings for commitment in marriage, rings for friendship at times, you know, it might be a symbol for friendship, another of a relationship or commitment. And you had mentioned the ring as a circle. What do we, eternity or God? A ring is unending, a circle is unending and is universally a symbol for God. And we see it in the symbol of the Trinity. You've seen the three circles interlinking as God in three manifestations. So the circle is a symbol for God. So the stranger, probably a part of himself that's been ignored because he does not identify him. He's been ignored. So he's somewhat, he's strange to him. And he gives him this ring. And he is very pleased, and he realizes the value. It's almost like the merchant with the pearl we were talking about, you remember? Or the great treasure. He really treasures this. Now, I would think this has to do with his Christian faith, that the ring somehow is connected to his Christian faith, and maybe it was something that was given to him in the beginnings of his life, you know. And maybe he's been ignoring it for years. But the stranger now comes and confronts him and gives him the gift of the ring. But as the time goes on, another man, another shadow side, you see, this is a more negative side. And maybe, you know, he says something about, hey, this is a good life. I make good money. I like sailing. I like the ocean. I like ships. I like commanding a ship. And that ring there, I don't think, you know, don't. So anyway, he talks him out. Finally, he gets convinced. So he throws the ring away. Ah, it's worthless. So we are really seeing a conflict, you know, his struggle going on with him. He throws it away, but he throws it into the water. Probably, I would gather, I'm assuming he threw it overboard, into the ocean, in effect. And the ocean, it's like throwing it back into the unconscious, or it's throwing it back into the source of all life. And the ocean certainly is connected with God in one sense, but it's throwing it back where it is no longer available. If we turn our back on it, ignore it. It goes back into the unconscious. Sometimes, you know, we deny things. We might be denying how angry we are about something, or hurt or something, or grieving. And we deny the grief, you know, you try to push it away and be cheerful. But then it sneaks up and confronts you in another way. So it goes back into the unconscious. But that energy is still all there. And that, I think that's what's amazing in this dream. As soon as the ring is thrown into the waters, a fire breaks out up on the mountaintop. And immediately we see the power. And fire also would symbolize. We are really into universal symbols at this point. That, but I mean, like water, the ocean, the fire, the mountain, are all very common, universal symbols to all of us. They have a common meaning for all of us. And so fire, of course, fire can have many dimensions to it. It can be a fire of purification. It could be the fires of hell. It could be the fire of spiritual energy. And it also could be threatening. You know, Paul says something, I'll be tried as by fire, something like that, and purified by fire. The trials of persecution and trials of imprisonment. I get purified by the tests that I've been put through. So at least in his dream, there's this immediate connection of throwing the ring away, and this energy pops up on the top of the mountain. And of course, a mountaintop. What might a mountaintop symbolize? Have any thoughts about mountains? Have you climbed any mountains? What was that experience like?
Well, it was an accomplishment.
Okay. An accomplishment. That's often what a mountain symbolizes, reaching, achieving, working hard to get to the top, and then when you get to the top, there's an exhilaration or maybe a perspective that you see out over the world, to an inspirational experience. Well, and there are holy mountains, Mountain of God or Zion and so on. So my thought is that this represents the spiritual energy that he is struggling to connect with or has been pushing away. And I think we pretty well...
Could that have anything to do with the leading of God, like with the pillar of fire?
With the pillar of fire? Yeah, well, that's a nice association. Uh-huh. I think it more represents. Now, this is what you'd call amplification of the dream. Is for one thing, you would make associations. Now, he particularly dreamt of the Alps. Maybe he climbed in the Alps at one time. You know, what did the Alps mean to him? Mountains. And the fire, and the flame. See, so that you could amplify the dream by your own personal associations, and then when you come to more universal symbols, you can get some keys from what these, just like what you pulled out of the Old Testament, that God led the people of Israel with the fire symbol. I was just going to read you briefly here. This is an illustrated encyclopedia of traditional symbols. It's a useful book to really pull together all the kind of universal meanings of symbols from even many traditions. Other religions, as well as our own Christian faith. It's not something to use too quickly, because you should always work with your own personal meanings and associations in a dream. But when you get to something that's more obscure or a universal thing, you can help amplify what the meaning might be. Now, under fire or flame, and I'm sure as he looked up, he saw the fire, he saw the flames. Here it speaks of transformation, purification, the life-giving generative power of the sun. It's associated with the sun. Now, another dimension, it says the unseen energy in existence. another aspect, change or passage from one state to another. You know, fire transforms things. It transforms metals or chemicals or changes something from a solid to a gas, and so it's a means of change. The medium for conveying messages or offerings heavenward. Fire manifested as flame symbolizes spiritual power and forces. So I just give you a little idea there. And of course, the symbol of the ocean or the sea would be that of the unconscious.
You remember at Pentecost when the tongues of fire came down upon the people and changed the people
in more ways than one,
spiritually and physically. They were able to speak in languages, right. But they were changed spiritually in order to be able to speak physically. Maybe that was his tongue of fire that came down upon him and changed
him. In a way, I'm sure this dream was probably very clear to him. I mean, it's not that difficult in that he was that I think he was struggling with his own Christian faith, because what happened then is that he left the work of being a sea captain and went into the ministry and into seminary and became an Anglican clergyman. So this was the turning point. And you might say a transition. It changed him, his direction. And this is the start of his new career. And his honoring the ring. And it's interesting that he the shadow figure that with him says, I'll keep the ring. I'll guard it. You aren't quite ready to take it and be trusted with it. So he's got a helper in him. It's interesting, you know. That's there to help him in his journey, who will guard the ring that has special powers. I think it said that as you will need the energies, the spiritual energies of the ring. So that. Well, how's our time? 12:30. Well, that is basically sort of what I wanted to share with you and open it up for more discussion if there are questions.
I recently read that there's going to be a television special on that amazing place. I think it's Wednesday. On the public television.
And what is the, is that going to, that is one of Campbell's series. What is it, the title of it?
Well, it's going to be Amazing Grace.
Amazing
and
Grace.
It's on public television.
Public television.
It's Wednesday.
This coming Wednesday.
I'm going back tonight, or this afternoon, and I'm thinking.
Is it supposed to be something of the story of Jerome John Newton?
Right.
I see.
How he came to write that.
And how he came, it'd be interesting to, I mean, when you read a few of the lines now, they Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. Maybe you can get the feeling of why he said wretch.
Well,
and now he is a sea captain,
He was very guilt-ridden of the slave trade.
Saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found, was blind, and now I see.